The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with a bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Well, hello there, everybody, and welcome to a brand new edition of On to the Next One. Back for the third time this week as we discuss the fallout from a memorable UFC 257 event this past Saturday night, Fight Island in Abu Dhabi, which saw Dustin Poirier and Michael Chandler reign supreme with memorable finishes in the main and co-main events, respectively. And as always, thank you so much for listening, you crazy, crazy people, especially after this entire eight-day stretch in Abu Dhabi. But I am Mike Heck, and joining me as always in this crazy thing called matchmaking is the co-host, the co-matchmaker, the best friend, and the Prince of Positivity, Mr. Alex Gailey. How you doing, my friend, after a crazy night, a crazy week, as a matter of fact?
Listeners, if you have been watching and listening and keeping up with every MMA fighting podcast and show this week, you have probably seen approximately like 60 hours, like 60 hours of my best friend Mike and or myself and other members of our staff this week. So hopefully you did. Hopefully you did listen to all that. And we are in your nightmares. That is the positive note that I want to open the show. It's been a busy week. It's been so great. We've gotten so much support from viewers. And there's been so much to talk about. It's funny. I'm glad we've kind of taken it one show at a time. I think when I look back on this week, we have a bunch of storylines that I think we'll be remembering. Even in this crazy world of MMA, we'll be remembering this week when the year end comes, and might see some of the storylines pop up in our best uplifts. I don't know, but yeah, a solid return to Fight Island for the UFC.
I would agree with that, and I think one of the more memorable moments of 2021 will be from the main event. So let's just get right into this thing. Dustin Poirier shuts a lot of people up in the headliner. He knocks out Conor McGregor in the second round. Poirier and his coaching staff, phenomenal game plan. They grapple with Conor early. They build confidence in Dustin throughout the first round. Come out firing with hard leg kicks in the second that really got to Conor. You could see just how uncomfortable he was getting as the seconds were wearing down. And then Poirier lands big shot, then the flurry, and he ultimately puts Conor McGregor away. Huge win. Despite even being an interim champion, this was the biggest win of his career, and it seems obvious that his next fight will be for the lightweight title, most likely a vacant title fight. But the options in terms of opponents aren't as clear right this second. So especially if you watched Dustin Poirier's post-fight press conference, now you're just like, what the hell is going on? So what do you think happens here, AK, after that incredible moment for Dustin Poirier on Saturday night?
I don't know what you mean, Mike. It's very clear to me. This is definitely not trying to help everyone understand what could happen. No. This is, if I could magically make the next matchup for Dustin Poirier, what would I do? I am going Poirier versus... I need a little bit more preface here. In a fair and just world, Mike, a fair and just world that I want to live in, Poirier fights Charles Oliveira for a vacant lightweight title. That is the fair and just matchup. Is it the most marketable matchup? Probably not. Is it... Are there... I mean, could you argue that some people are more deserving than Oliveira? Maybe. I would say no. I think Oliveira should be guaranteed a title shot. But I'm sure there's, like I said, there's names ahead of him, even some rematches that people would want to see with Poirier. But no, if I'm calling the shots, Oliveira has done everything he can do. He's 8 straight wins. He's finished everyone. He's got some weird loss on his resume. Guess what? So does Poirier. So they're coming from the same, a similar narrative. And I think it's time to reward Oliveira with that shot. And I think Poirier should get, again, reward him with another shot at the undisputed title. So I'm not considering any alternatives. Dustin Poirier, Charles Oliveira. That's the one.
I want to preface what I'm about to say with the fact that I completely agree with you. The fight to make the fair and just, like, remember 1992, fair to Flair? Fair to Flair. This is like the fair to Flair when it comes to Dustin Poirier in the lightweight division and Charles Oliveira specifically. This is the fight to make. But I had a feeling you were going this direction as well. So allow me to put myself instead in the shoes of the UFC brass here. And the answer is Michael Chandler. Now, if you watch the preview show, I picked Michael Chandler to beat Dan Hooker, but to do so in a way that would put him in a position to probably win one more fight and then maybe get to a title shot. He gets to the halfway point of the first round and blasts Dan Hooker and puts him away viciously in a way that nobody had done before. Yes, I know Hooker was finished by Edson Barboza, but that was kind of an accumulation of damage throughout that just built and built and got more uncomfortable as the fight went on. But this was like the first punch to the face that Chandler threw and landed. It was just like one shot, dropped Hooker, put him away quickly. It was just wild. And especially in this sport, especially with casual viewers actually checking this one out because Connor was on it, I think a lot of people want to see it. This is not the hardcore fans fight, but this is like the casual, hey, I'm just getting an MMA now, or I'm trying to get back into it kind of fight. Because let's think about it from a business perspective. Michael Chandler, not a cheap acquisition. They spent a ton of money on him just bringing him in. They spent even more money trying to promote him and push him in October as the backup fighter to Nurmagomedov versus Gaethje. And he's gotten this big promotional push. I just have a hard time believing that after all of this push and him delivering a performance like that, that he's not going to be rewarded with the title shot. So I think the UFC is going to do absolutely everything in their power to put together Poirier versus Chandler. Poirier may not be in love with it, but he can say what he wants. He wants to check that last box in this Hall of Fame career of his. So there's one thing he's got left to do, and that's become the undisputed champion of the world. So if the UFC says, Dustin, I'm going to give you your undisputed title shot, but you got to fight Michael Chandler, I think he will ultimately say yes to that because I think he believes he can win that fight. I think it's probably, and this is no disrespect to Michael Chandler, but if you're talking Gaethje, Oliveira, if you're talking Michael Chandler, I mean, just being honest, Chandler's probably the, I'm not going to say the easier of the three fights, but probably the most winnable of the three fights if you're Dustin Poirier. So, unfortunately, for the show's sake, this knocks two winners off the list for me. But I honestly think we're going to see Poirier versus Chandler, okay?
I prefer Oliveira, but I can't remember the last time the UFC, maybe if ever, has done this good a job of bringing in a new name for UFC fans, not a new name in MMA, of course. Chandler is a veteran and Bellator star. Building him up in this way so that, yes, he was actually in position to deliver and could conceivably... If that title fight was announced next week, you would hear very little complaint. Again, you'd hear people saying, yo, Oliveira should get it. Or like you said, oh, why not Gaethje? Why don't we see a Gaethje-Poirier rematch? You'd hear it. But it would not be a huge groundswell. There were a lot of people saying, yes, I want to see Chandler. And like, especially from the casual set, maybe some people seeing him for the first time, you know, who are just like, who is this guy? Why is the UFC, you know, why are they so behind him? And then they see that knockout and they're like, okay, I need to see this guy again. You know, it was like a positive, who the F is that guy? You know, McGregor's famous, who the F is that guy? It was like that, but in a good way. It was like, who the F is that guy? I need to know more. So yes, I much, much, much prefer Oliveira. But boy, no one's going to argue if Chandler Poirier gets made.
The UFC does deserve a lot of credit. You're absolutely right for putting Chandler in this position. But Chandler, good on him, man, for taking this and running with it. I went to Twitter as soon as he finished knocking him out, and I said exactly this. Dear Michael Chandler, do not waste this opportunity. Maximize your time on the microphone. Call your shot. And man, did he ever. That was amazing. That was an A++. I couldn't type plus fast enough, AK, or enough times. It was beautiful.
I am going to deduct a point for being too proper with his grammar. Yes, I understand it was a rehearsed promo, which is good. I've told you, I'm in favor of rehearsed promos. If you are going to nail your moment and you don't feel 100%, you're like someone who's like, he's really good with the media too, but I think he knows I need to get this right. I can't just fire this off the cuff. So I don't know if he rehearsed it, but certainly something he maybe at least wrote a few notes down before just in case he won. But as he was calling out Nurmagomedov, it was so grammatically perfect. And I'm a grammar nerd, so I couldn't ignore it. And it was just like, and you, Khabib, if you decide that you shall one day fight again, then I, Michael Chandler, UFC lightweight, shall be here waiting for you. And I'm just like, okay, you know what? You nailed it. You nailed it. It could have been a little more organic. But you definitely got your point across, and A+, if this were an assignment, A+ on grammar for sure.
Oh man, yeah, I loved it, and I love the way you presented too. But if he had just come out and just been like, I'm just so happy to be here, you know, whatever the UFC wants, he's not getting a title shot. That promo put him over the top, and good on him. Now, when it comes to Conor McGregor, there's always options for Conor because he's the biggest star in the sport. This is going to be a sort of a theme, I believe, between the two of us, AK. This is just too easy to me because the UFC is now at a position where you can finally put together the Nate Diaz trilogy fight. Like, it'll be massive. Nate is a star. We haven't seen Nate since UFC 244 when he lost to Jorge Masvidal. And you know what? When you mash those two guys up, no one's going to care. No one's going to care that he lost to Masvidal. No one's going to care that Conor just got knocked out by Dustin Poirier, the first knockout loss of his career in the UFC. This is the easy fight to make. I know I'm far from alone on this, but it's as simple as it gets considering where he's at coming off a loss like this. I just don't see any other viable option. Agree or disagree?
I've joked that McGregor, whatever happens, you know, could go on to fight a Paul brother, or you know, I assume the Manny Pacquiao fight is off the table now, though it was brought up to him at the press conference, and he said, and he kind of said that he thought it was a done deal before, maybe not now, but didn't say exactly why the fight fell through. Even before, I think, last night's fight. So I still think, you know, there's a chance he dabbles in boxing, but if we're talking about staying in MMA, yeah, so especially with, I think, Nate Diaz, who was it saying? I don't know if it was manager himself, someone saying that Dana White, maybe, that the plan was for Diaz will probably drop back to 155, and I still think he can. I know he's a bit older now, but he's disciplined enough. He has the kind of diet for it. So, yeah, I'm with you all the way. Let's not try and ice skate uphill here, people. McGregor Diaz 3 should have happened a long time ago. It's beyond wins and losses, as you said, Mike. They could both be on three-fight losing streaks. One of them could be on a three-fight winning streak. The other could be on a three-fight losing streak. It doesn't matter. It's almost promotional malpractice that second fight hasn't been made. Again, I'm sure there's reasons. McGregor's own aspirations, doing other stuff outside of the UFC. Diaz is not giving an F. And the UFC probably not wanting to shell out what both these guys are demanding. I imagine they'll probably want a lot of money. And trust me, it'll be worth it. It'll be worth it. It might cut into their profit margin a bit. But a third fight, it will still end up maybe being easily the top 10 of the pay-per-view buys of all time. Maybe even top 5 if you get the build right. So I'm all for that. The other name I'll throw out there, this was mentioned on the post-fight show we did the other night, Mike, I said I would shout this person out. Credit to Isaiah and Jane, apologize if I mispronounce, for suggesting a Max Holloway rematch, which certainly, hey, we just saw the Poirier rematch from McGregor's featherweight days. Why not another featherweight callback to the Max Holloway fight? Could certainly be done.
Yeah, I don't dislike that idea. And that puts Holloway in an interesting position because there's no way he's not next for the title at 145 after the Volkanovski versus Ortega fight. But, you know, what if he decides to just give up that spot and fight Conor instead? Then he probably falls back in the title conversation. So some options for Holloway as well.
He said he's not chasing the belts. And I'm not as confident he gets a third Volkanovski fight if Volkanovski beats Ortega, which I do expect. I am picking Volkanovski in that fight. So if he doesn't want to, you know, again, dabble into, oh my gosh, will they book a trilogy or not? And somehow that McGregor fight comes down the pipeline. I think Holloway obviously bite on that for sure. Forget featherweight. You can always come back down.
I'll throw out another name that I've seen a lot on social media. A lot of people want to see McGregor versus Tony Ferguson. That seems a very popular choice. I will say I don't love that fight. I would watch it. I'd be intrigued by it because you get two very powerful personalities, two very interesting styles. But I don't know how you feel, AK. I need to see Tony Ferguson get a win under his belt first before he fights Conor.
Did he invent McNuggets? Ferguson? Yeah. I want to say he did.
Well, I mean, like, McDonald's invented McNuggets, but in terms of McGregor, yes.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yes, but yeah, I do think he's the one who came up with that brilliant insult. So on that alone, perhaps he's earned a fight with McGregor.
Listen, I'd watch it, but not my first choice.
Oh, everyone would.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Koreshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
So I already match made for Chandler.
Yeah.
And sure, you could do Gaethje or Oliveira against Michael Chandler if they go another route for Poirier, but I think Chandler will ultimately get the title shot. What say you for Chandler? And even if you want to throw Dan Hooker in there and say some words about him, what are your thoughts on the co-main event and the aftermath?
I'll touch upon Chandler quickly. I think I am fixated on a Dos Anjos Gaethje match. This is not based on any rumors or anything. There's no necessarily buzz around it. It's just a fight I really want to see, and I think it makes sense for them. I know Gaethje can probably hold out for a higher ranked name, but just I really, really like that matchup. I've wanted it since RDA's last win. I still think that's a good one. So I would have Chandler match up with my theoretical RDA Gaethje winner. That's sort of my preference. So I'm kind of doing a bit of matchmaking upon matchmaking here. And you know, again, that's what we do. So again, not against Chandler Poirier at all, but if that doesn't happen. And again, I prefer Poirier Oliveira. I think Chandler, Dos Anjos, Gaethje, dangerous fight for Chandler. It would suck because again, he's done everything he can to put himself into position for a title shot. So he could only stand to lose, especially, I mean, even if you beat Gaethje, I think you lose something, you lose a part of your soul, but I would just love to see that fight as a fan, not worrying about, oh, who gets a title shot out of those three guys? What does it mean if they lose? I'm putting that aside. I just would really, really, really like to see that fight. Hooker, you know, I saw a lot of good reader suggestions. I'll leave it to that for now, Mike, and I'll leave it to you if you have a Hooker point you'd like to make.
Dan Hooker's great.
Yes.
I disagree with our colleague Casey Lydon, who's saying that he needs to go all the way back and fight somebody outside of the top 15. I don't necessarily agree with that. If you did like a Hooker versus Ferguson, I'm cool with that. There are matchups out there for Dan Hooker. The loss is a tough one. He had two amazing fights last year. And if he fought the Dustin Poirier he fought in June, if he fought like a Dustin Poirier from 2 years prior to that, he finishes Dustin Poirier. Poirier's composure in his chin has just gotten vastly better after all this time, which is kind of bizarre to say in a sport like this, that your chin actually gets better. I know he went up a weight class, but he's just so much more durable now than he was before. And the calmness he showed in that moment, I mean, Hooker was seconds away. If there's another referee in there, Dan Hooker could have a knockout win over Dustin Poirier. Like, that's how close he was to putting that fight away in the second round. So this loss sucks. He got caught. He's going to be kicking himself. And he's going to have a lot of time to stew on it in a long quarantine. So I don't know if we're still waiting to hear like his response to all this, because he did take his gloves off in the octagon. So I don't know what that means. I don't know if it's just frustration or if he's done. Either wouldn't surprise me if we're being honest. But I still think there's plenty of fights for Dan Hooker. I still think he has a large fan base. And if you look at like the YouTube numbers, Dan Hooker did very well. People care about the man.
Yeah, look, if Dan Hooker throwing the gloves in, I don't think it was retirement. I think it was I'm done with this BS for now. I just need a break. I think it all hit him at once. All the time he'd put into this fight and for it to end so quickly, and all the time ahead before he gets to go back to New Zealand and see his family. I think we've said it's going to be like until February. I know that's a week away, but like, I mean, we mean like mid-February, not the first week of February. It's going to be a while. Let me put it this way: longer than a man who just was in a brutal fight should have to wait to see his wife and children. Okay, so you have to sympathize with the guy. Another reason I don't really want to matchmake for him is I don't even want to see him fight again until like September, until second half of 2021. He needs to take a break. He was in two wars in 2020, and then yes, this harsh knockout. So take a break, Dan Hooker, and I'm sure I do think we will see him fight again.
Joanne Calderwood got back into the win column. She had a great showing against Jessica Ai. She looked really good in this fight. It was my opinion, AK, I don't know how you feel. This is one of her best performances overall from start to finish. The women's flyweight division, as we said at the end of 2020, very, very interesting right now. What would you like to see next for JoJo, AK?
It was a great performance, a very composed. Jessica Ai, again, I know people give Jessica Ai a lot of a guff, but she can be a really frustrating opponent to fight. She's in your face all the time. She smiles a lot during the fight. That can't make you happy. You know, there's just an attitude about her. I think the attitude that people don't like about her outside of the octagon sometimes, it carries over into her fights. And she's had a successful career, right? So, yeah, great performance by JoJo. Mike, I don't want her to have to fight again before getting a title shot. I don't want her to have to fight again. Jessica Andrade shouldn't have to fight again. Lauren Murphy shouldn't have to fight again. I know. It's crazy. Like, the flyweight division is it's so weird. It's so good right now. And any of those matchups, if you match up any of those three women, it's awesome. You know, I can't complain, but it just feels like they've all done enough. You know, whether people think they can beat Shevchenko or not, it doesn't matter. Shevchenko has to defend against somebody, and I think those three women have done everything they can do. They've had the great runs, experience, just awesome. So, in a perfect world, Shevchenko defends the title three times in like a 2-month stretch, and then takes the rest of 2021 off. But I don't think we'll see that happen. That'd be a huge flex. So I'm going way outside the box here. And if JoJo has to fight again, I want it to be in a fight that I think is very, very winnable for her and I think would provide some personal vindication. I'm going wild random here. This was a rematch that happened at 115 pounds a long time ago. JoJo's first career loss. I would like to see her get a chance to fight Marina Moroz and avenge that loss. That was her first after the Ultimate Fighter. I think she was 9-0 at the time, and then she got upset. This was definitely an upset at the time. Moroz came out of nowhere, caught her with an armbar. I don't think that happens again, and I think Calderwood would like to get the chance to prove that.
So this, I think most of this episode, pretty easy. Mm-hmm. Early, it's pretty simple. This is the toughest one, because we have no idea what's happening at the top of this division. Absolutely no idea. Because nope. It seems like Jessica Andrade is going to get the title shot against Valentina, and that makes a lot of sense, but, I mean, we don't know anything. Like, we haven't heard anything at all. Lauren Murphy, who could get a title shot and no one would complain about it, she's probably going to have to fight one more time. We talked about this a lot on Wednesday. You could do the Chookagian rematch. You could do Murphy versus Calvillo. There's some heat there. You got Jennifer Maia in the mix at number 4, so she could play a factor in this as well. But the problem for JoJo is she's fought most of these women already. She hasn't fought Lauren Murphy, but listen, here's the thing. Calderwood got to a title shot, all right? I know that. She got to a title shot. She was booked. Fight didn't happen. She took a different fight. She took a risk. It fell through. But when Joanne Calderwood got that title shot, the division was far less interesting than it is right now. I mean, leaps and bounds, far less interesting than it is right now. We were just looking for fresh contenders. Like, anybody with any kind of impressive win over any sort of a name that's any way recognizable, you were in the conversation for a title shot. And this is no disrespect to JoJo. That's just realism. That's just pure honesty and facts. JoJo looked great on Saturday against Jessica Ai. But we cannot ignore the fact that she is 2-2 in her last 4 fights. And when you have all these contenders, putting her in a title fight just doesn't make any sense. And the other win was a split decision against Andrea Lee. It was a very close fight. I thought Calderwood won, but there's discussion there. Like, if you wanted to make an argument for Andrea Lee, I'd probably argue back at you. But if you made a compelling thing, maybe I would be like, all right, I understand where you're coming from. Joanne Calderwood needs another win. she might need two to even get back in this conversation. And this is, part of this is a lame answer because we're going to have to wait and see how all this plays out and how this all gets put together. I mean, you got Viviane Araújo out there who I think is above JoJo right now. So unfortunately, she's going to have to fight backwards. So I'm going with the fight I selected after UFC 255 and going back to the well. You do Joanne Calderwood versus Antonina Shevchenko. You want to get the champion's attention. You beat the sister. That might be the best available option to her right now and probably the best path to a title shot considering the logjam up the top. Beat her sister. Get in Valentina's head a little bit. That's your best path to get back to a title fight or even in that discussion. So I'm sticking with it, AK. I think as good as JoJo looked, I feel like the division has just moved so much forward momentum-wise that win is great, gets her back in the win column, but she basically just held her spot.
First of all, I'm ignoring the Jennifer Maia loss that Calderwood took. That fight shouldn't even count. Yeah, it should come for Maia. Good for her. Got her a title shot. So in my eyes, Calderwood has won four of her last five fights. The Maia thing was a stay busy, doing the UFC a favor fight. Shouldn't have even taken it. So four of last five for Calderwood in my eyes. I'm being selective here. Secondly,
BS.
Secondly, are you using poor Antonina as a prop to build up a Calderwood Shevchenko fight? It's so pro wrestling of you. I'll give you your shot. You're gonna go through my brother and then you gotta go through my sister first. And then a lot of interference from Valentina, of course, in that fight, should that fight happen. But how dare you use Antonina as a prop for this possible Valentina-JoJo matchup?
It's not a prop. I wanted Antonina to get that fight after her last performance. After she beat Ariane Lipsky, I wanted her to fight JoJo then. I thought she improved that much that I thought... And listen, I don't think Shevchenko's like a super big underdog in that fight. I think the lines are pretty close. Because, I mean, if we saw the improvements from the previous Shevchenko fight to what we saw against Ariane Lipsky at UFC 255, I mean, those are two different people. Two different fighters.
You know what's different is your Antonina takes from this episode to, like, the very early... People go back, you know what? Here's an early check the tapes. I'm not... Look, Mike's shaking his head. I'm just saying, Mike was very unimpressed with some of Antonina's results before... when we first started recording the show. And I'm not saying that's unfair. She it's not like she's a top 10 person. I mean, admittedly, a lot. Some of her notoriety was coming, of course, because she's Valentina's sister. And she had a very nice record before coming to the UFC. But I am glad to see that Mike has turned around and has a lot of nice things to say about Antonina, because we had some, again, check some of those early episodes. I'm just saying. When Antonina's name came up, we had a lot of Mike going like, nah, not even in the discussion.
Let me just clarify this once more. Okay, let me just clarify this once more. My issue was never with Antonina Shevchenko. My issue was with the UFC matchmakers, because the matchmaking was atrocious. Mm-hmm. Atrocious. Hey, Antonina, you ready to make your Octagon debut? How about you fight Roxanne Modafferi? Like, are you nuts? Are you insane? That is the worst decision you could make. What is wrong with you? You know what? Oh, you know what? Good attempt. You know what we're going to do? We're going to put you in there with Caitlin Chookagian next. What? Are you crazy? Like, that is not how you build a prospect. That is not how you build a prospect. It's just terrible matchmaking. I felt bad for Antonina Shevchenko. I wasn't against her performances. I just thought she was put in, like, an unwinnable position. It sucked. But now, in a way, maybe it wasn't the worst thing for her, because maybe those tests put her in this position, because she looked amazing in November. Amazing. And I think she would give JoJo a run for her money. I think that's a great fight. And I think it's the best option for JoJo. It just sucks. Her taking that Maia fight was a terrible mistake, and she'd be the first one to admit it.
Yeah.
But there you go. 125, so interesting. Way more interesting than it was coming out of The Ultimate Fighter. So we saw a very impressive showing from Mahmoud Muradov. Puts away Andrew Sanchez in the third round. In the middleweight division, he has now won 14 fights in a row. This guy is super legit. AK, I'm ready. I am ready to put this man to the test right away. This man that I'm going to put him up against may not like it, but I want to see Muradov again, and I want to see if he can swim, so to speak. I'm ready to do it. Let's give him Brad Tavares and see what happens. I think it's perfect. It gives us a chance to get a more realistic glance at Muradov's ceiling And also we could see if this now healthy, rejuvenated Brad Tavares, is this guy ready to go on another run like he believes he can. So this is my pick. I think it's easy. We don't like to necessarily match make from the same card that often, but in this case, I think it makes perfect sense. What do you think?
Let's be honest here. Tavares versus Carl's Jr. was the battle. I should have thought it. I can't. I didn't think this before they fought. The battle of the middleweight middlemen. Okay, these are the two guys that we always, most people say, okay, when someone's as you literally just outlined, when someone's climbing up 185, usually you end up fighting either Carlos Jr. or Brad Tavares, and then you end up getting a proper ranked opponent. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense in that way. And by the way, that fight, my goodness, that was a delicious middleweight fight, wasn't it? Yeah. I know when I say this, some people don't understand what I mean, but the middleweight division for the longest time still is. I would say has the most fights that seem just not bad. I'm not saying they're bad. They're kind of listless. They're kind of monotonous. It's like a lot of fighters in the division are well-rounded, but don't quite have an A-plus skill, don't have a great finishing ability. And that's how I would describe both Tavares and Carlos Jr. Carlos Jr. a little bit more on the ground. I mean, obviously his A-plus skill is his grappling, but he just doesn't always get it there. And when he doesn't get it there, you get these medium to high level sparring sessions. And again, I know it sounds very derogatory, but again, both these guys have been in the UFC for a long time. So when I say this, they've had a great success getting these kinds of fights. So more power to them. They are both excellent fighters. They just are part of a division where some of the fights are just, you cannot distinguish one from another. So thank you guys for delivering on the middleweight potential of your fight. That said, I like Tavares more for I like Tavares Sean Strickland. I don't know why I'm feeling that one, but Muradov for me actually the easy one was rebook Muradov versus Krzysztof Jocko. Jocko, I had to remind myself, is on a 3-fight win streak. I think he's a stiff veteran test. So I really along the same lines of thinking with Tavares. It was originally scheduled for October 31st. I have no problem running that one back. I think that's the one to break Muradov into a firm spot in the top 20. If people don't have him there already, he's just on the outside of mine. And then after that, then it's for sure a top 15 ranked opponent if Muradov can get past Jocko.
People forget that we were days away from getting Muradov versus Kevin Holland on that October 31st card. What a ridiculous fight that would have been. I can't wait to... I have a feeling we will see those two guys fight at some point.
Yes.
And I am all in for that one. But we were so close to getting that fight. Just kind of sucks we didn't get it. But turned out really well for Kevin Holland. What a year he had. And let's see if Muradov can get close to that in 2021. So let us head to the main card opener, AK. We will begin with you on this one. Marina Rodriguez, massive underdog. I thought the lines were outlandish. This is worse than Dakirico versus Joaquin Buckley, if we're being honest. She stops Amanda Ribas with strikes twice in like a 30-second span. Huge win for Marina Rodriguez. She derails the Ribas train, and now she's in a primo position after going winless in her previous two fights. So what do you want to see after an impeccable kickoff to this main card?
Well, I feel bad here. I'm gonna break out a name that is among our list of fighters who is often brought up on our show by us and by our readers, usually brought up by us as alternates and as our readers as suggestions, like Ally Quinta, Gregor Gillespie, Kevin Lee, people who have been away for either because we know they have injuries and we're just kind of, I don't know when they're going to be. Josh Emmett's another name that keeps coming up. Josh Emmett finally did get booked, right?
No.
Anyway, so there's another name that keeps getting. But there's a bunch. People know what I'm talking about. Anyone who listens to the show will know. There's always guys who bring up like, oh, or it could be this person, depending when they come back, blah, blah. So I'm breaking out someone from the strawweight division who fits that description. I kind of want to see Rodriguez fight Tatiana Suarez whenever Suarez comes back. And I know Suarez, I think I've heard, aiming for summer return. And I don't know if Rodriguez wants to wait that long, if we're being honest, especially for someone who's a very tough opponent. But I also think that it indisputably elevates her into the short list for a title shot if she can beat Suarez. And I think Suarez still needs to be tested. And Rodriguez would be a huge, huge, huge test for her because we keep touting her as a future champion. But Marina Rodriguez is no one's walkover. So this is definitely for me a test for both women to see who gets the title fight. I know there's a more obvious choice out there for Rodriguez, but I went away from that. I'm going Tatiana.
So if they booked that fight and she beat Tatiana Suarez, I mean, can you think of a like tougher road for like your first five UFC fights in a women's division than like Marina Rodriguez would have?
Hit me, Mike.
She debuts against Randa Marcos, which if they fought now, Rodriguez is probably like a 4-1 favorite, no disrespect to Marcos, but this is 2018 Randa Marcos. Fights to a draw off the Contender Series. This is her UFC debut. Then she fights Jessica Aguilar and just runs right. She just rakes her. Just runs right through her. I mean, I know Jessica Aguilar was a bust in essence. She wasn't the same fighter once she got to the UFC, but still, at that time, impressive win. Then she decisions Tisha Torres, which is no easy feat. And more oftentimes than not, when Torres is in a position like this against a fighter like where Rodriguez was, Torres eats up her opponent pretty easily. Not this time. Rodriguez gets the win. Then she fights Cynthia Calvillo in a co-main event. And she won the first two rounds. And then Calvillo came back with a great third round after Calvillo had a big weight miss. Fights to a draw. Then she fights Carla Esparza. Loses a split decision. Like, there are a lot of people who thought Marina Rodriguez beat Carla Esparza, who could be getting the next title shot. And now if you put her in there with Tatiana Suarez and she wins, she absolutely would get a title shot. She would jump everybody, in my opinion, because the strength of schedule is outlandish. And I'd be interested to see that fight. I do agree with you. I don't think she's going to want to wait that long. So in essence, this was the easiest pick on the entire card for me because I thought the winner was going to get the Michelle Waterson fight, Hibas's original opponent for this card, and I'm sticking with that. They are around the same ranking, I believe, as we record. I think Waterson is like one spot above Marina. And come Tuesday, Marina might take her spot and be one spot above Waterson. A little flip-flop action. This is the fight. No need to overthink this one. Waterson is a name. It makes sense. Hibas probably would have got this fight to try to get the Waterson rub. She didn't win. Let's give Rodriguez the attempt at the karate hottie rub there. That's my direction from the jump. This is too easy.
It makes too much sense, doesn't it? I mean, I have Waterson at 8 in my rankings and Rodriguez at 9. And by the way, my rank is different from the UFC because I rank the champion as just 1. So everyone's a good spot lower than they normally would be in the official rankings. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Waterson, frankly, has probably a bigger name than Suarez. Among casual fans, Waterson is one of the more out there, more well-marketed fighters. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of name value, it bumps her up. I don't know if puts her quite in that position for a title shot, but impressive victory and the right call out. Yeah, for sure. It could happen. Like I said, that resume is ridiculous. That UFC resume is stacked.
Yeah, I don't think it's a title shot win over Waterson, but it's title eliminator fight time if she does go in there and get Waterson. And let's be honest, you're going to throw Waterson on a card at this day and age, you're going to get one of two things. You're either getting on the main card of a big pay-per-view or you're headlining a fight night. So either is a pretty good spot for Marina Rodriguez. So now we head to the wild card selections where we choose one fighter we have not match made for yet, and we go ahead and do it right now. So AK, we will begin with you. Who is your wild card selection coming out of UFC 257?
First off, my quick hits. Look, I'm down for Juliana Pena to get a fight with Amanda Nunes after she fights the winner of Ketlen Vieta, Yana Kunitskaya. So I'm on the Pena train, guys. I like the call out. I think she has the kind of personality that can sell a title fight, but I understand the trepidation of people wanting to see her fight Nunez. And I'm not saying she could beat Nunez, but if Nunez does, my other reason for not making this my big pick is I don't even know if Nunez ever defends the bantamweight title again. Like we said, a lot of us feel like she might retire in 2021. It could be after a big featherweight fight. Could be after maybe something happens with Kayla Harrison. That's just something I'd want to see. So that's why it's so hard to say, oh, well, Pena can just get a title fight. It's so dependent on what Nunez plans to do. Armin Sarukyan, future title contender, got to make that weight, brother. Got to make that weight. I wanted to pick him, but I couldn't do it. Khalil Roundtree, finish your plate, my friend. Finish your plate. Man, he street rules. Let me tell you something. Street rules. I think he won that Pacquiao fight. Street rules. Scoring, the way an actual fight is scored, not even close. He almost got blown out. I know people are gonna look at the two huge strikes he landed in the second round. He almost floored Pacquiao. Did not a knockdown and head kick, and then he head kicked him. And then the third round had a huge uppercut. two times I thought he could have pounced. And again, this is backseat fighting, by the way. I'm not in there with him. I'm not the guy. I'm not the one who hurts someone and then rushes in and gets Pat buried, or Chuck Congo, the other way around. Sorry. And gets Chuck Congo. So it's easy for me to say, why didn't Roundtree just go in and finish? And it's like, because look, if I say that now, we could be talking about a crazy Martin Fracknell comeback KO this morning if Roundtree comes in and gets blasted. So. But obviously, I'm just saying it hurt me almost to see Roundtree not win that fight, because he was closer to finishing, but statistically he just got blown out in the strikes. So you know, you couldn't give him the decision. My pick, I gotta go with Ablyaev. I'm going with Mostar Ablyaev, who found himself in a strange situation, it's Lentz who stepped in on short notice, right?
Yes, it was Lentz. No. Lentz was scheduled to fight Mike Grundy already.
I keep saying this. Yes, you're right. Yes. So Ablyaev stepped in and they did a 150-pound catch weight, which is a very good idea. And Ablyaev won a quote-unquote split decision, which, no. Eric Cologne, no, you messed up. So a unanimous decision win, really, by any other definition for Ablyaev. And I would like to see him. It's not quite in my top 20 yet. It's close. I want to see him face another top. I'm going prospect versus prospect. Let's see him and Sadiq Youssef.
Ooh, I thought we were going to have the same pick, AK.
Oh, where are you going with this?
I thought we were going to have the same pick. Okay, so I'm going to mimic everything you just said, because I feel like I don't know. This has been a while since we've had back-to-back same wild card picks. But I almost went with Amanda Hibas. I almost went with Sarukyan. But I feel like if you miss weight, you don't get to be a wild card spot. Mm-hmm. So I'm going with Ablyaev as well. Tough veteran test. I think you need one of those. Nick Lentz is that guy. He faced a little bit of adversity, but then he went on to beat Nick Lentz for like 85 to 90% of that fight. I actually scored a 30-27 for Ablyaev. If you scored a 29-28, that's fine. But I thought Ablyaev, even though he was in a tight guillotine and things were getting a little sketch ball, I still think he won that round. But Nick Lentz, tough as nails, guy's awesome. Short notice, Beravloya, very impressed with him. I'm ready to throw him in there with another really tough up-and-comer who was actually supposed to compete on this card, AK. I believe the UFC will ultimately go a different direction with one Hurricane Shane Burgos. I think they'll maybe give him someone like an Arnold Allen, maybe the aforementioned Sadiq Youssef, because Youssef's a top 10 guy. So that leaves one Canadian named Hakeem Dawodu without a dance partner. And Mavzar Evloyev likes to, shall we say, whip nay-nay and maybe bust out the old electric slide, AK. So that is my pick. In my own personal rankings, in my own mind, I have Evloyev ranked higher than Dawodu.
Oh.
But this is the fight to make, AK. Like, this division is so, so deep that you're going to have to put fights like this together. And even if they did, like, Ivloyev versus Sadiq Youssef, I'm cool with that too. You just have no choice when you have a division this deep.
I have Dawodu at 20. I have Ivloyev at 21. So I have them right next to each other. I'm not sure why I skipped over Dawodu. Maybe I haven't given up on the Dawodu Burgos matchup. Even though by any indication, it's possible they could just move on from that. But maybe I just haven't given up on that one yet. But for sure, I mean, Ivloyev, he's Dawodu, Youssef, Burgos. He's Arnold Allen. I'm down with any of that for Ivloyev. He looked great.
The fact that Ivloyev, on 2 weeks' notice, wasn't even breathing heavy in that fight with that pace, he didn't even have his mouth open at any point in that entire fight. It's just wild. That is a scary cat, man. Can't wait to see what position he's in at the end of the year. So,
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Koreshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
You've heard from us already. AK, what do the peeps have to say?
Oh, my goodness. So I've mentioned earlier this week, I want to kind of mix up the format a little bit because I do tend to sort of repeat myself. And I want to shout out everybody, but you guys have been so dedicated to getting your picks in. There's almost no time to mention everyone. So I apologize, guys, if your name doesn't get mentioned. I'm reading out picks first, starting off with some almost consensus picks, kind of picks that multiple people had. We talked about earlier. Look, this Poirier Chandler thing is a lot of steam behind it. Almost everyone who submitted picks, I would say three out of four of the readers who submitted picks, Poirier Chandler was their number one option for what to do with that. I don't know. I feel like we didn't mention this. Chandler versus Oliveira. There's again a bunch of people mentioned this. Why was this? Why is this not something weird? Like, I mean, we'd love to see it, obviously, but why is it not like in our top three of like options?
It's probably in my top three. Like, yeah. I mean, there's really only three places to go. You give Chandler the title shot, you give him Gaethje, you give him Oliveira. Like, that's that's it.
Another one that came up more than once, McGregor versus Gaethje. Man, I don't know if this version of McGregor, unless you don't like McGregor, then have at it. I don't know if you want to throw this version of McGregor in there with Gaethje right now. I think McGregor could really get hurt. I understand that's why some people buy a ticket. That's why some people buy a pay-per-view. He could really get hurt, but just engage. I do not like that matchup for McGregor. Right now, I do not like that matchup for McGregor at all. But several people called for it. As you said, Rodriguez versus Watterson, the obvious matchup. I would say almost 100% of the people who mentioned Rodriguez picked Watterson. The other one they said, and this would be almost like a mirror match. I do find them very similar in a lot of ways. Rodriguez and Jacek.
Yes. Yeah. Shout out to my man Marcel. He also said Jan Jonan would be a fun option for Marina Rodriguez.
I like that too. Rodriguez really did a lot for herself with this. That
she really
oh my
did.
Goodness! Like so many options now, and really at most, I'd say like we said, if with the right matchup, probably one fight away from at least being on the shortlist for a title shot. A lot of buzz for Amorodov versus Strickland. So yeah, okay, cool. I like that.
I like that too.
We got Pena versus Ladd.
Love that fight.
Really?
Love it. I think that's the fight to make.
I like it too. I feel like Pena's win over McMahon, maybe I'm overrating it. I almost feel like it puts her above Ladd. I'm not sure. I have to think about that. And then Pena versus Aldana is another one that came up. So it's a lot of options for Pena as well. Big, important win. I saw this one. And I thought it was just one person. I think at least three people recommended this. Dan Hooker versus, and again, it's hard because we don't know this guy's coming back, but Dan Hooker versus a returning Kevin Lee.
Like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
I'm into it.
Although I will say this, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Please, yeah.
I feel like we have to do Kevin Lee versus Islam Makhachev. I think you have to make that fight. There's just so much heat there. Kevin Lee had been calling out Khabib for so long.
Oh yes.
And you're never gonna see that fight. And there's been so much heat between Lee and Makhachev. They tried to rebook this fight several times at this point. I feel like this is the comeback fight for Kevin Lee, but if they decide to book Makhachev, you know, maybe you do the RDA fight or something like that. If they go that route, then yeah, I like that idea.
I like how Makhachev has become our we have Khabib at home meme. And then this is Khabib at home, : picture of Makhachev. And it's no insult to Makhachev. It's just, I've seen a lot of people bring him up as a proxy now that Khabib is away. So, oh, could we get Makhachev versus Tony Ferguson? That would kind of, you know, it was kind of getting Ferguson and Khabib. And I'm like, I guess. Yeah, sure. Tavares versus Omari Akhmedov a couple times. Yeah, I'm down for that. Calderwood Chookagian rematch.
It's fine.
Yeah, okay. I thought I had to mention it. And then one that I saw a couple of times, I'm surprised it came up more than once, was battle of 5-0 in the UFC versus 4-0 in the UFC, Giga Chikadze versus Evloev. So I don't want to match them up. I know I do a lot of prospect versus prospect, up-and-comers versus up-and-comer matchups. For some reason, I don't like that one. I just want to keep them apart.
Yeah. It happens. Maybe it's one is like just because they're too really solid prospects, and I feel like both of those guys could be in the title picture, so I almost want to wait and like let it burn for a minute. Plus I don't know if it's like maybe the international vibe to it, you know what I mean? Like when you have two international fighters like that who are on the come up, you almost want to keep them away from each other until it's time, you know what I mean? Like sometimes you get that vibe. There are certain times you have to book prospect versus prospect, but there's like levels to the prospect game, and I think both of these guys are on like the tippy top level when it comes to prospects.
Yeah, look, we're ignorant North Americans. We tend to lump all these, some of these guys. We just go Europe, or Central Asia. You know, so we kind of lump them all together, which I know is bad for us to do. But yes, you're like you said, international prospects. For some reason, it just feels better to not match them up if you can avoid it. I want to see them kind of flourish in their own way. Going to Instagram quickly. We only had a couple of our boys chime in here. Jacob Best, of course, our usual. A lot of the picks I just said. He wants the Hebus versus Angela Hill.
I like that pick. That would have been that would be my pick.
Well, I think we've said though we kind of want to see Hill run it back with not run it back, but get the chance to fight Tisha Torres. You know, just kind of rebook that one. But the Hebus Hill thing kind of jumped out at me. And then Max Block on Instagram said Hooker Felder. Now I don't know if he forgot that they fought less than a year ago. Or he just really wants to see that fight run back because it was a close one, and also ruled, which helps. I would love to see that fight again. If you booked that as their next fight for both guys, I'd be like, yeah, that's freaking awesome. And then you booked it again, I'd be like, yeah, give me a five part series between Dan Hooker and Paul Felder. It's not good for them or their health or probably the sanity of their families, but I'm all for it. And if Max did forget, I will say that. This is something that can happen if Felder fights again, gets a win, and like I said, if Hooker doesn't come back until way later in the year, maybe even doesn't even fight again until 2022, I could see Felder wanting to run that. Like I said, it was a close fight, super entertaining. I could see Felder volunteering to do that one again. So I know it sounds like a weird suggestion, but I'm going to say I think Max might be on to something here if we're looking really, really big picture.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah. Let's go to Twitter. Solicitations from our own MMA fighting account. I asked about Juliana Pena. For the most part, most just people saying, no, I do not want to see her fight Nunez. Various variations of it's not a close fight, but you know, not said in such a polite way as I just did. And I'm seeing Holly Holm. This is from Jerry at Shakedown ST. I think we joked, like, that's probably the fight that's going to happen, right? Because Holly Holm is the ultimate title fight gatekeeper, right?
God, I hope not. God, I hope not. Like, I have not, like, I listen, Holly Holm has done a lot in combat sports. She has done a lot. And oftentimes she has come through with some big moments. There have been many times in her UFC run where she has not come through in big moments. And it's been a long time since people have been, like, excited for a potential Holly Holm fight. You know what I mean? Like, when was the last time I was like, oh, I can't wait to see Holly Holm fight somebody? The rematch at GDR is right there. And it just seems too easy. Like, and I'm absolutely, especially after what we saw from both of those women the last time they fought, we have to see what happens with Holm and GDR. And if Amanda, and it's unfortunate because we don't know what's going to happen with Amanda Nunes. Like, she could go in and beat Megan Anderson and just be like, I'm done. I'm out of here. Thanks for the cheese. Peace out. Mm-hmm. Then you have to do Holm versus GDR for the vacant title. Like, that fight has to happen. I'm not interested in seeing Juliana Pena versus Holly Holm right now. I'm just not. Holly Holm versus GDR is the fight to make. There's no other fight that makes sense.
UFC on ESPN 24, headlined by Holly Holm versus Juliana Pena. It's coming soon.
The trash talk would be outstanding.
Oh, my goodness. I asked about our boy Sarukian. Again, unfortunately, he missed weight. A lot of people did not seem to care. So Chris Aguilar says Drew Dober, Gregor Gillespie. Sure. Yuri Dietrich, rebook Hackparast. I wouldn't mind it because he did miss weight. Normally, I would say I thought this win kind of moved him past the Hackparast fight. He did miss weight, though.
I think that's the fight to make.
And I think one, yeah, maybe just rebook it, right? And then one that I think was brought up on our post-fight show, Moicano. I don't know if you brought that up or if a reader brought it up or Casey brought it up, but...
Casey said Dan Hooker versus Moicano.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, I think I prefer that. I don't know. I don't see Moicano and Struk. I think Strukian, I kind of rate him a bit higher as a prospect, as it were. But yeah, rebooking Hackpress. Yeah, I think Yuri, I think you are onto something here. And then I also asked about Rodriguez. I was just so thrilled with her performance. And I don't know. Let me just check quickly. Yes, Lance at Fight Lore with a zero instead of a letter. No, on Twitter he likes Ioana. Again, that's like I said, that's one that came up. Here's one that. Oh, here we go. Sorry, this is what I want to mention. DE on Twitter says, winner of Dern Ansaroff. Maybe Ansaroff. Dern, I think she's above that fight.
above Marina?
I think Marina is above Dern right now.
Certainly.
Yeah, I know Dern is the bigger star. I don't think he'll win. I know it sounds weird. I think Ansarov is a little more veteran and experienced MMA, so I think she's more worthy of fighting Marina than Dern is. I don't know, but you know what? It's true. If Dern has a first round submission or something, the sky's the limit for her. So it's not out of the question. It's not like super crazy. I don't love it.
Yeah, Dern's top. Ansarov's top five. So if Dern beats her, she jumps probably ahead of Marina. So. I'm with you, I think, AK.
Our boy Martin at Mighty Magic Mart on Twitter. I don't know if we mentioned. Did we mention Ferguson versus Hooker?
I think we brought it up.
We brought it up. I like it. I don't know. I'm into it.
It's fun.
Yeah. Brian Shea on Twitter. Brian P. Shea, laid out a bunch. He wants to see Poirier versus Chandler. Gaethje versus Oliveira, number one contender. Ferguson versus RDA, maybe a rematch, which I wouldn't mind seeing run back, if I'm being honest. McGregor Diaz 3, of course, and Hooker versus Diego Fajera, who is booked, isn't he? Is he not?
He's fighting Beneil Dariush February 6th. But yeah, okay. If Diego wins that fight, sure.
Oh, I see you answered, Mr. Brian Shea. Mike, you're on top of things. You have already addressed these plans. And then Casual Eve, the hardcore casual on Twitter, says Poirier versus Oliveira. Yes, that's what I'm sorry, we're so far in the show and I've forgotten my own words. Yes. Yes, thank you. I was like, why did I make a note for this? Oh yes, because Eve, the hardcore casual, knows what fight to make. It is Poirier versus Oliveira. I meant to read that out with more enthusiasm. I blew it. I gotta go to a few of my boys in the DMs. I keep saying boys. You know what? Some of these people might be girls. I actually don't know. So my peeps. Let's see. Some of my peeps in the DMs. I want to read this one all the way out. Aronsky says Evloya versus Burgos, and he says, look, two completely contrasting styles that will make for a weird and probably really good fight. My big caveat is that I want. This is a good part. My big caveat is I want it to be in a fight night main event. Both guys deserve more eyes on them. I'm trying to think of the only scenario where I see that happening is if it's booked as a co-main and the main event falls off. And again, not to insult the other guy, they just don't have that level of name recognition. But obviously, still fight a lot of MMA fans would tune in for. Yeah, I don't see that being a main event anytime soon, though.
Yeah, I like the matchup. I don't like it right now, but I like it. I'd like to see what would happen. I think the UFC really likes Shane Burgos, and I'm not saying that whoever they book Evloev against, they don't like, but I feel like Burgos is kind of in a position where they're like, let's give him a guy like around the same rank or maybe even a guy above, because they could do a lot with Shane Burgos. Shane Burgos is a good representative of the company. He's a really good fighter. That fight with Josh Emmett was ridiculous. And you know what I like to see for Shane Burgos? More in 2021 AK, I'd like to see Shane Burgos in the broadcast booth. Like not in the commentator seat, but put him on the desk with, you know, Karen Bryan and them. Like we saw Walt Harris did a phenomenal job. We've seen Michael Chiesa. We've seen some of these fighters get these opportunities. I'd love to see Shane Burgos get that opportunity.
Yeah, no, he's good. He's anyone who's watching interviews with Burgos, very comfortable, very good with speaking. And yeah, I bet he'd be a great analyst. I'm going to run off really quickly four lightweight matchups. You tell me which one jumps out at you, Mike. Michael Perugini wants Sarukyan versus Lee. Redwood Rebel likes Hooker versus Fiziev. Ryan Doherty chiming in with Hooker versus Iaquinta 2. And CD coming in with Sarukyan versus Trinaldo. I guess Hooker versus Fiziev is the obvious standout there, huh?
Man, like that's one, a crazy
which
fight.
One, which one would you want to see the most?
If I'm Dan Hooker, I'm like, not really. I'll take some more time off. It does nothing for Dan Hooker.
Yeah.
It does a lot for Fiziev. And if you haven't followed Rafael Fiziev on Twitter, do so, because he's the best follow of 2021 so far.
The guy is funny. I like Sarukyan versus Trinaldo because for me it's almost like a punishment for Sarukyan. It's like you're getting a good fighter on a win streak, but it's a veteran. It's a guy who's been around forever. He's not going to be an easy fight. Beating him is only going to raise your profile like a little bit. Like it's not going to give you a big boost, but it's a fight you have to win. This is for missing. This is, hey, make that weight. All right. So that's why I like that. I actually think that I like it, and I think that will happen. I do think – I think Sergio Trinaldo is going to happen. And lastly, actually, I'm going to go back to Twitter at the end because I think I lied, Mike, before the show. I was saying we did not have a wild matchup. We did have one that came in as we were recording. So I will go back to Twitter at the end. But very quickly, email, shout-outs. Marcus McGahey, who normally hits me up on Twitter. I forgot him last week. He got his submissions in on time. I forgot to read them. So he hit me up by email. So thank you, Marcus. Evloyev versus Dawodu, as you mentioned. Prakniaw versus Kendi and Zichukwu. I just want to shout out Prakniaw because we have not matched him up. I don't mind that at all. And then the favorite of his, I liked Pena versus Pennington, a battle of tough 18 teammates. I could see that. I don't know if people still – Pennington's still in that top 10. She's still firmly in that top 10. I know kind of people forget about her. I don't mind it. Tristan Gordet, Poirier versus Gaethje Oliveira winner, sure, if that fight gets made. Chandler, I kind of mentioned this, Chandler versus Dos Anjos, and we've mentioned this as early in the show, Calderwood versus Calvillo rematch. So, okay, I'm into that. A lot of rematch possibilities for Calderwood. I think that's the message to take away from here. Matt Bradbury always comes in with 30 matchups from the card itself, and then like... 10 extra of just bonus matchups, I guess just like what he was thinking of after this, you know, whatever card shook up the landscape. Albazi versus Dvorak, both 2-0 in the UFC, great flyweights, I like it. Sarah McMahon versus Penny Kianzad.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're into that. Sarukyan versus Gillespie, sure, again, whenever Gillespie's ready to come back. But again, I like the Trinaldo punishment fight. And then, this was almost my show ender, because I like it, because it's a battle of... And I'm just putting this in basic terms for the poster. Good versus evil, the ultimate battle. Roxanne Modafferi versus Jessica Eye. And I'm not saying... literally evil. Evil Eye, okay? I'm not saying Eye's a bad person. I'm just saying Roxanne Modafferi has a very soft and gentle disposition, which many people like. Jessica Eye is a very confident, powerful woman and does not always ingratiate herself with the fans. Okay, I'm being as diplomatic about this as possible, Mike. I'm being as diplomatic as possible. They never fought before. For some reason, I thought they had. Probably because Roxanne's been around forever. But I think, much like we saw some of that with this fight, huge fan following for JoJo, some animosity towards I think you'd see a lot of that with Roxy and Jessica I as well. So I thought that was a cool matchup.
I like it. You sold me, AK.
Okay. Okay, good. Yeah, good. I don't know if I can convince anyone else, but that's one. Bobby, at Bobby Adkins on Twitter, came in with this. It's always a weird one. It's always with this weird matchup. And it's always one where like some fighter has to go to a different weight class. He wants to see Conor McGregor go back up to 170 to fight Wonder Boy.
Jeez. I'll tell you, you know what? I would love to see that for Wonder Boy. I would love to see Wonder Boy get that opportunity.
Sure.
That'd be a wild fight. I don't like Conor's chances in that fight at all, though.
Me neither. I guess people like it from the sense that Wonderboy is probably not going to like do what Poirier did to him and like take him out early. But it might be like a Jeff Neal. I'm not saying McGregor is like similar to Jeff Neal at all. I'm saying as far as how difficult the stylistic matchup is. But Conor's tricky, too.
Yeah.
You know, Conor might like that kind of strategic, tactical, like five rounder. It's really not something he's got to do in a long time, like a strategical, tactical striking matchup. That's kind of cool. So, again, at Bobby Adkins, shout out to you. I think that is the reader submission of the week. And I'm certainly happy to end the show with it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wonderboy's a big guy, though.
Yes.
I mean, like, Nate's not the smallest guy on Earth. Cerrone's certainly not the smallest guy on Earth. But Wonderboy's like, it'd be like Conor fighting a 200-pounder.
Yeah, it'd be noticeable. You saw that, it'd be one of those things, when you saw them face off, you'd be like, oh. Oh, right. Connor's a lightweight / featherweight, not a welter.
That's interesting. I mean, Wonderboy would like me? For real? I would love to.
The NMF?
Can you imagine the press conference for that fight? It would be amazing. Wonderboy would bring him like a video game system. Connor would give him whiskey, and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson would have to politely pass. Connor would have to give him a bottle of Pellegrino instead. I mean, it would be just good times. Good times. The readers rule.
They do. Readers, you guys are so great. Keep sending them in. Thank you for the prompt, Mike. At Alexander K. Lee on Twitter, Alexander KK Lee, same thing, just two K's, on Instagram, and alex.lee at sbnation.com, my email. Guys, hit me up.
Yes, I am on Twitter at MikeHeck_JR, Instagram at M_HeckJR. I even made this big speech about how I'm going to get better with Instagram on the show maybe Wednesday, and haven't done anything at all since then. So there you go. So, AK, for the first time since we began this wonderful podcast of ours, we're going to be off next week because there's no UFC card. Nothing to talk about. So we are going to give you, the listeners, and ourselves a little bit of a breather, of a little recharge of the batteries, because you got a bonus show this week after the Wednesday card. So it all evens out at the end. We gave you a bunch of bonus content for the new year. I think we've done our part to do that for you. So it all evens out at the end, in my opinion. So the week after, there's going to be no rest for a while, because we're going to have I think it's like a 7 or 8 weekend stretch we have cards. Or I know it's all of February. I believe it's all of March, too. So we have like all of February and March. This will be the only week off we have for quite some time. But we'll be back next 2 weeks from now to discuss the what's next following the UFC's return to Las Vegas on February 6th. I believe it's going to be UFC Vegas 18. That one is headlined by Alistair Overeem versus Alexander Volkov. Huge fight for both guys. Especially for Alistair Overeem, he's on this kind of like Ric Flair tour, trying to get back to the top, or he's got to win every single fight, or title shot just becomes non-existent for the rest of his career. So fascinating matchup against the giant Alexander Volkov. Co-main event, Corey Sandhagen against Frankie Edgar. Great fight, very important one. We'll see another big fight at 155, Diego Fajeda and Beneil Dariush. That's a great fight, a rematch from several years back. And AK, it's finally happening, the long-awaited octagon debut of the former Ryzen Bantamweight champion, Manel Cape, against Alexander Pantoja. This card's real good, AK.
That should be the main event. That or Edgar Sandhagen. Look, Overeem Volkov, I think that's ending in a knockout. So that's a waste of rounds. You're just wasting rounds there. You give those two extra rounds to either Pantoja or Cape. That fight could end in a finish too, actually. I don't know if I see that one going the distance. They should have given those rounds to Edgar and Sandhagen. So I'm just saying. I'm a bit of an Edgar mark, so whatever. I wish one of those smaller guy fights was getting the main event spot. But yeah, wow, I'm just looking at the card now. That's real good. It's real good.
I'm looking at the rest of the card. Nico Montano is back against Carol Hosa.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed, Nico. Nico, let's get back in action.
Cody Stamey was supposed to fight Merab Dualishvili. That is not happening. He's now fighting Andre Ewell. Molly McCann versus Laura Procopio. Marion Renault against Macy Chiesan. Mike Rodriguez against Danilo Marquez. Julio Arce versus Timur Valiev. Holy potatoes. There's your under-the-radar fight for that card. Michael Johnson versus Clay Guida. Wow. Oday Osborne versus Dennis Bonder is on that card. Sungwoo Choi against the debuting Colin Anglin, who just got
who we have mentioned on the show, Colin Anglin. We have brought up on the show before as a prospective matchup. So that he's becoming a real UFC fighter, guys.
And the return to action for one Devontae Smith. He is back after just a pretty gnarly injury, the loss to Kama Worthy, the unfortunate loss of his sister. I mean, the guy has gone through so much over this last year and a half. He returns to face Alex Da Silva. So happy to see Devontae Smith getting back in there as well. So that's a really good card. It's going to be a lot of fun. That's going down on February 6th. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Until then, we are out of time. For AK, I am Mike Heck. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Remember, don't take this all too seriously. MMA is supposed to be fun. We'll see you next time right here on to the next one, the podcast.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andre Koreshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.